Blog Talk Radio.
This is Yasagonige, Will Blue Otter, a 7th grade grandson of Sawanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous plant-based native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation. Well, hello everybody, this is your old buddy Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, in East Central Tennessee, and we are really honored. Well, first of all, let me say, ever since I started this show, I wanted to make contact with folks in Hawaii. We've had some contact with Australian Aborigines and some African people, but it's taken a while. We did have Hunalani on a few years ago. I don't know if he's still active, and it's a little bit different from Huna from Hawaii, but I want to introduce Serge Kahili King and those folks that that know about Huna. You know, he needs no introduction, but welcome to the show, Dr. King. How are you?
Fine. Aloha to you.
Aloha. You know, my first wife, just prior to meeting her in 1977, she lived in Hawaii for 3 years. And it was really interesting. She was from Portland. Her mother had passed away previously. Then her dad passed away, and she got a small inheritance. And she always wanted to see Hawaii. And I have never had the privilege of coming to the islands, but I feel like after living with her that even though I haven't set foot there, that I'm Kama'aina. Now Joanne visited. She flew into to Hawaii, and I guess the first day she was at Ala Moana Shopping Center in Honolulu, and she was looking at something, thinking about whether she could afford to buy it, and the spirit told her, put that back, go home, put your things in order, you're coming back and you're going to live here. And this woman taught me how to live by the spirit. My mother was very close to the spirit, but Joanne taught me how to really walk in the spirit. So she went home. I think she was back there within about 10 days. And, you know, back in those days, I don't know what it is like now, But it's impossible to find a job, much less a place to live. And, you know, she found both in the first day.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, she had a degree in child development, family relationships, and found found a job working in child care. She moved into Makiki, and she was LDS and had served a mission. And she just loved Hawaii. Our financial circumstances prevented us from being able to visit Hawaii. But I know she told me, she said, you know, we can really go on the cheap. She says, there isn't any place you can't go on the bus. Yeah, and she says, I've got friends there. But we never could afford the plane ticket. And anyway, we got so busy, you know, doing what we do. But anyway, I wanted to, you know, give you that little bit of background. And sure is good to have you on board.
Thank you.
Well, I want to talk a little bit about you. When Serge Kahila King was 14, he was initiated into the path of Hawaiian shamanism by his father. At 18, he was adopted as a grandson of Joseph Kahili of Kauaia, a kapua or shaman of the Hawaiian tradition. In addition to his years of training with the Kahili family, Dr. King spent 7 years in West Africa, being trained in African shamanic traditions, and has made in-depth studies in other such traditions around the world. Today, he teaches people how to use shamanic healing techniques and uses his knowledge to help others discover their own creative power. You have a PhD. You've published a large selection of books and tapes on Huna, the Polynesian philosophy and practice of effective living, and on the spirit of aloha, the attitude of love and peace, for which the Hawaiian Islands are so famous. But welcome. Tell us about yourself and what you like the people to hear.
Okay, well, especially, I mean, you did.
Especially Native people. You know, a lot of people that listen to this are Native American people or people that are very interested in Native American traditions.
Right. Well, the Hawaiian tradition is a Native American tradition. I am not Native American myself. I was adopted. But I have lived it, and I teach it, and I share it.
It's the same thing if you're adopted. Like, Sam Houston was considered to be a full-blood Cherokee. He didn't have a drop of Cherokee blood, so we're over that.
Okay. Well, that's how it is here, yes. So, you've already said what I do. I write and I teach. I live on the Big Island. I live in a forest right close to Kilauea Volcano. And then from there, we have an organization with people all around the world who are teachers and healers, spreading the knowledge and helping to change the world for the better as well as they can.
That's a good thing. That's a good thing. I hear you got a little buddy there in the back. Is that a conure or a little cockatiel or something?
Oh, we do have doves right now. Oh. That's probably what you're in the background, where I am.
Well, I'm not really sure what to ask. We kind of run this show, always run it by the spirit, and we might seem like we're stumbling sometimes, but let's just dive right into it. I know most people that listen to this program are... know how to go into spirit and get answers. And I guess that's, you know, I guess it's really what we're here to talk about. What is your method? How do you go to that place yourself? Or can you even explain it?
Well, okay, I'll try a bit. It is different in Hawaiian tradition from a lot of others. We're talking about going into a place of either journeying or the inner world to connect with spirit. In Hawaiian tradition, you simply do it. It's a shift of focus. Drumming is not used for that, and dance is not used for that. Both drumming and dance are used to come more into the present moment and energize the present. But you go into the other worlds, you turn your attention in that direction, and you go. It's possible to use some natural sound to help calm down and focus before you do that, like, you know, the ocean waves or waterfall. But the actual technique is just turn your attention there. Now, when I was trained, my uncle taught me how to create a space in the inner world. We call it the garden, and a personal garden. Mm. The reason for that is the word for garden, in one of the words in Hawaiian, is waena, but it also means center. And so you're creating a center in the inner world. And then we established that, and that's almost like our base camp. We say that because this is also called the adventurer path. And so we set out from our base camp to anywhere in the inner world we choose to go.
Hmm. So you really feel like that's your real home, and the waking world, the driving around, is you're on adventure. But you really feel like that's your real home, that garden?
I'd say it a little bit differently. You know, it's like having one home. One place is not more real or less real than the other. Basic concept is that we're all dreaming, and even what we call the outer world, for the sake of convenience, is just a joint dream. So we travel through dreams, and ideally we learn how to feel at home in any one of them.
Well, yeah, I guess, you know, it's not much different. I mean, they're... It doesn't seem to matter what tradition. It all seems like it's
the same.
The same process, but with maybe different names. But
different techniques for doing it, but mainly the names are different.
So you now, I guess. Well, how did all this come about with you? Now, when you were a young man, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you. How you started on the path, and about your teacher.
When I started, my father presented me with the option, let's say, when I was 14, as you mentioned. At the time, we were living on a farm. So when I accepted the path, it's always a voluntary thing. I'm the only child out of our family who did. But we were living on a farm. So my first introduction into the shamanic way of thinking and living was very close to nature. It's hard to get much closer to nature than, milking cows and mm-hmm. raising chickens and pigs and cultivating fields and learning how to not only do that, but also learning how to treat it at all as alive, aware, and responsive. So that was my introduction. And that was for about 3 years before my father died. And so then I wandered around like a lost soul for a while and joined the Marine Corps because I needed some discipline. And it was while I was in the Marine Corps in California that I was contacted by the Kahili family. Now, Joseph Kahili had adopted my father when he was a young man. And so they knew where I was. And so I was contacted, and I went to visit them. And very fortunately for me, Joseph Kahili took a liking to me, as he had to my father, and I was adopted as his grandson. So then he was pretty elderly by then, so my training was given over first to my Auntie Laka, and she trained me. While I was in California, she trained me in the energy, in the body work, in human relationships. And then I went to finish college, went to Africa, trained with my mentor there, Imbala, who was a Hausa shaman, and trained in Senegal, Mauritania, and the Gambia, Dahomey, Togo, because he was a wanderer, and he would pop up when I happened to be on a field trip. So there I learned from him an awful lot about healing energy, about energy, what we might call power spots, about merging with animal spirits, It was a fascinating, wild time.
You know, when you mention the Marine Corps, I was told don't ever interrupt an elder, but, you know, when you said you were in the Corps, you remember that movie years ago, Jack Webb, you know, long-haired, who was it? That was John Michael Vincent, and he drafted in the Marine Corps or something. It was during Vietnam, and Jack Webb had his hands full with this kid. And so that's what's been going through my head. What year were you in boot camp? Yeah, what year were you in boot camp?
Yeah. How old was I?
What year was that in boot camp?
What year? I joined in 1956.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Okay. So go ahead. Okay.
It was just like that.
Okay, that's back when the DI still beat you up. So anyway, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, had to deal with that.
Oh my gosh.
So after Africa, we came back, and now I had a family then. I was married when we went to Africa, and we had one son, 2 years old when we went. We came back with three, and settled in California for a while, where I began to work with my uncle, Juana or William, and so he's the one who trained me in the more esoteric aspects of the journeys, on the philosophy behind stuff, and how to do a great, great many things. And he taught me, best of all, he taught me how to learn. And so around about 1975, he kind of kicked me out and said, go out, use it. You know, if you want to learn more, you got to learn more. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that about that time I made the decision in Africa, I wanted to share this knowledge with the world. I thought that since most people around the world were becoming urban, and very often the shamans were staying at home in the villages, I wanted to make it my work to bring this knowledge back to the people who had moved to or were brought up in the cities.
Mm-hmm.
Because where the knowledge is practiced doesn't matter at all. And so I began doing that, and very interestingly, if we look historically, around about the same time, many other shamans all around the world had decided the same thing. And so there began this great movement of teaching and knowledge from lots of different traditions. The people started going to the shamans where they were available, and more the shamans started going out to people. And so that was the start of my career.
Hmm. Were you aware during the same period of time, the Hopi elders and Grandfather Rolling Thunder and Grandfather Mad Bear Anderson, they were becoming active and more or less doing the same thing. Were you aware of the prophecy and what was going on over here in the States?
I was aware of what was happening, yes.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look. Fascinating. Yeah, that was, there was the prophecy that the grandchildren of the yellow hair or Custer would someday, you know, come to native people for wisdom.
Still happening.
Did you feel like it was about the 60s? You know, was it about the 60s?
That's when it really started, of course.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Interesting. See, I was kind of an anti-hippie back in those days. instead of dressing down, I dressed up. And
I was in Africa last half of the 60s.
Interesting. Huh. Fascinating. Yeah, boy, it's... really makes you wonder what Creator's up to. Anyway, don't let me interrupt. Keep going. I'm fascinated with what you're saying.
Well, like I said, I started it. I began teaching workshops all over the place, first in the States and then in Europe, and then taught in so many places, Japan, Korea, Australia, haven't taught in South America, although I've been there quite a bit, and even taught in Greenland.
Hmm.
Yes, quite a few places.
You know, there's a prophecy that's recently come to pass. They said that someday the trees would start growing there again, and they'd start using wood for ceremony. And you know what's happening? You know, because of the
melting.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, and
even have some of our staff go teach I taught in Russia, and then I have one of our staff is teaching hula and Hawaiian massage in Russia.
Hmm.
So the thing is really spreading around.
Interesting. Huna's been going worldwide during the same period at the time that the Anipi Sweat Lodge has been going worldwide.
That's right.
How fascinating. Are you you know the story of Wovoka, you know, and the ghost dance, I'm sure, and he said that, you know, he was visited by Jesus or somebody that looked like him. But are you aware that in the 1930s in the Tanna Islands in the South Pacific, that there was a person that visited them for a year, and told them. Now these are Polynesian people. They just called him John Come or John From, and he just said, "Look, the missionaries are going to come." He says, "I want you to keep your original set of instructions." He gave them something to drink that helped them go into an altered state. When they go into prayer, he stayed with them for a year, and then he left. But the way they described him was exactly the way that Wovoka described who he thought was Jesus. They said he wasn't as dark as the Paiutes, who are as dark as the Melanesians, and he wasn't as light as a Caucasian man. But he was about halfway in between. But it seems like this idea of sticking with your original set of instructions is what the Spirit has wanted people to get back to figure out whatever it is, even if they have to go. Like I talked with Tom Blue Wolf about 5 years ago, he was contacted out of the blue by the Rain Queen from South Africa, and she
she had been in the spirit world and was told that that Tom, whose ancestors were Creek Indians, his ancestors had left a special song in the spirit world that needed to be sung during this period of time, and that he needed to come to Africa to learn it. So there's all kinds of things going on.
I had my great vision in the 70s in California on a mountain in the pine forest. That was powerful, and that kind of confirmed me on my path. I was already doing it, I was already teaching, but this was a very profound experience that gave me the strength and energy to go even deeper and farther. And it was there was a similarity.
What did you learn? What kind of instructions, or can you tell us?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, you know, it sounds, when you try to put it into a few words, it sort of doesn't come out very profound. But it basically boils down to teaching the principles that I learned. And that's something like the set of instructions that you're talking about, mm-hmm. my uncle gave me, and spreading the spirit of aloha.
That's a good thing. I know my friend Red Elk had a great vision, and he was shown possible things that might happen if we don't get our stuff together, and of course what could happen if we do. And I guess that's what the Mayan elders are saying, that you know, we've got a choice, and you know, everybody's. There's always some date, you know, that people are concerned about. A lot of people are concerned about 2012, but the Mayan elders that I interviewed said, hey, there's nothing written in stone about 2012. And,
that's right.
You know, it could be 15 years either way, they said, but, you know, there will be changes. And
it'll happen. It'll happen when it happens. And people talk about being ready, and they don't quite understand what that means. It's not like suddenly you're somebody opens up your mind and transforms you. This is what a lot of people are thinking. No, the change is going to happen as more and more of us transform ourselves. And that's going to determine when it happens.
Mm.
Not going to happen to us. It's going to happen from us.
Mm-hmm. We are the ones we've been waiting for.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. You know, Red Elk has taught, he's been on, you know, he was on the radio with Art Bell years ago, and he goes on with George Nuri about once a year. And he told me he's taught about 10,000 people how to make contact with spirit. But he says he's only had about 5 or 6 come back and actually report that they actually did it.
Yeah, that's a tough part.
It is.
Because you could teach the knowledge, and since I teach extremely simple and practical, and we have many thousands of people using that kind of stuff, but people, like you said, the people who actually go in and journey and plunge deeper into the knowledge are very, very few.
Do you think maybe it's because a few of us maybe are wired to do it? And that it takes a little bit more effort for other people to do. Why do you think it is?
It has a lot to do with motivation, and it has a lot to do with curiosity.
Mm.
I found a very important factor. And the more something is different from the patterns you're used to, the less curious an awful lot of people seem to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know John Brings Buffalo told me, he said, you know, there's a lot of people that are born again Cherokees, if you will. He says, most of them are scared to death of going to hell, you know, because of their religious programming, and they're scared to go any further. And I think that's really sad.
It's sad, but here's the thing. It's happening anyway.
Yeah, it is.
And so it's happening a few here and a few there, and that's increasing. Not by the stupendous numbers some people would love to see, but it's happening. So I've made it my work, you know, when I finish with this money, well, I want to come back and keep going. I specialize in Earth.
I didn't catch that. This connection is a little fuzzy. You said you specialize in what?
Earth.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought you said. Okay.
Well, I'll keep coming back until we do it.
Yeah, you got to be persistent. I found out, I was raised, you know, my mom was a Methodist, dad was a Lutheran. They didn't go to church. Mom just kind of had the attitude, you don't need a church to worship, you know, and right. Which is a, you know, even though that's where I got my native blood through my mom, and I got a special lineage through dad too, and his people were directly from Sweden and the old ancient Viking bloodline, there was kind of an undercurrent in the house, and mom was just kind of known to be a little, I guess they called it, you know, ESP or something, and she was interested in prophecy and talked about it, but it wasn't like all parents screw up all kids, you know, in some ways, but I felt like I had a pretty firm spiritual foundation and a pretty open mind excuse me. But
you wouldn't be doing this if you didn't.
Yeah, you know. And then when I was 21, I was told to go to Salt Lake, and of course I assumed it was because I was supposed to join the LDS Church. I did anyway, but I met her, a couple of weeks later, and of course previous to that, I'd had experiences with women, and I kind of, you know, was out of the dating game, but you don't go to Salt Lake, you know, you enter the biggest marriage lottery in the world, you know, when you go there. And my gosh, I stepped off the street corner one night on my way home, and this voice said, "You're going to be married in a place very near here before conference time." And I stopped and I thought to myself, get thee behind me. I said, I don't want anything to do with women. I forgot it. And, you know, that's exactly what happened. And we met, and 5 weeks later. I think most people get scared when they hear things like that. And they think, oh, that's crazy, and they push it away.
Right.
I think it's really important not to push those kind of thoughts away, even if you might not want to accept them right away, but maybe just put them up on the shelf.
Sure. The more we can teach people self-confidence, the more willing they are to at least do that. To not be afraid of their thoughts. Not be afraid of what they hear and see in the inner, mm-hmm. from inside. At least so they don't have any fear of it. Mm-hmm. That's a good start.
Yeah. And when you, whatever you call it, you know, shamanism, you know, walking in the spirit or vision quest or whatever, it's all kind of the same thing. But I'm reminded of, did you ever watch that? There was a TV show. I just had a senior moment. I'll see if I can remember what I was going to try to say, it was about a small community up in Alaska, this guy from New York, you know, went up there to, you know, the mining company to be a doctor. Anyway, you remember the show, don't you? What was that called?
Yes. North something.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, you know, the young fellow that was the radio announcer. He had some shamanic experiences, and
remember, the very best thing that impressed me the most was when he was talking to somebody about it. And he said, mostly what we do is just counseling.
Mm-hmm.
Common sense counseling. And he's right. That's what most of the real activity is.
But I think, you know, a lot of it is about kind of facing your fears too, isn't it?
Yes, that's right.
Interesting. Really don't know what else to ask you. You really kind of said it all. You know, if there's anything you want, I'm sure you've been interviewed, you know, elsewhere in the media, and you've talked, you know, people all over the world.
Often what I'll share with the principles that my uncle taught me. Anybody who knows my work, of course, will be familiar with them. But for some people who aren't, might be worthwhile sharing those. I get 7 ideas about life. And the order, we make use of the order, but the order is not critical. But we start off with the idea that the world is what you think it is. Your experience of your world comes from how you think about your world. And the second one says there are no limits. And that can mean that anything is possible if you can figure out how to do it. And it also means that we're all connected. I don't just mean humans. I don't just mean the earth. Everything is connected. And we all influence each other all the time. We have a third idea that says energy flows where attention goes. And that's real simple. So that brings about one of the real important skills that a shaman has to learn, and not just a shaman, but shaman in particular, because we're talking about it, and that is how to focus. How to focus and how to change focus. Both of those are important. Because that's going to energize or de-energize whatever is in your life.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for and the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Then we have one that says, now is the moment of power. Right here and now, this is where you're living. You're not living yesterday, you're not living tomorrow. living here and now. Past doesn't have any hold over you because the only thing you have from the past right now are memories. The future has no hold over you because the only thing you have about the future right now are expectations. And you can change your relationship to those and have some really incredible changes happen in the present moment. We say from the word aloha, we say that to love is to be happy with. That's what love is. It's not only being happy with someone, but the active side is helping others be happy. That's what it's all about. There's no pain and suffering in love. The pain and suffering of a relationship comes from fear and anger. Love is the happy part. We say that all power comes from within. And within doesn't mean inside your body. Within means from spirit. That's where power comes from. It's the power to do. It's the power to act, not the power over. And finally, we say effectiveness is the measure of truth. A lot of people have trouble with that one. But what it means is that if it works, it's true. And we do that all the time. We use this. We have this calendar that we work with. That here in Hawaii, where I am right now, it says that it's, you know, Saturday, June 30th, year 2012. But there are hundreds of calendars in the world. That just happens to be the most popular one. And we use it because it's convenient, because it's effective. So that's the only way it's true. So we say if it works, it's tuna. So in our healing, in our teaching, we use anything from any system, from any tradition, as long as it helps the person, as long as you can learn from it, as long as it works, because that's what counts. That's what matters, effectiveness. So that's a short summary of the ideas that I was taught and the ideas I live by and the ideas that I teach others.
Well, I don't think I've ever heard anything that was more succinct than what you just said. But, you know, some people can wrap their head around it, and some, you know, they might to get the first two steps, and you know, sometimes people get stuck on things, and the universe keeps coming around teaching them the same lessons. And but I guess it's all about a journey, isn't it?
Sure it is.
And this life, a lot of people, you know, really, they focus on this life.
Yeah, but they focus on this life in too narrow a way.
Mm-hmm.
The dream world is part of this life, too. And it's just as important and far richer, but it's mm-hmm. part of this. And to ignore that, such a waste.
What kind of tools do you recommend for people to learn how to interpret their dreams, or even help remember sure. them, or okay. you know, whatever?
Well, okay. First of all, from our point of view, interpretation is the least important part.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to interpret, if you want the most accurate interpretation, then it comes from you.
Mm-hmm.
So what you do is you treat every aspect of the dream as being alive, aware, and responsive, and you have a conversation. And you see you have a tree there. You wonder why it's a purple tree. Well, ask the tree and trust what you get.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're not going to have the same symbolic meaning, the same things all the time. You change. The dream changes. Life changes. Many things have multiple symbolic meanings. So talk to your own dream is the way to get the best interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, however, we learn from the dream, from the experience, and we learn how to heal dreams. That's far more useful.
I know for me, when I have a dream, of course, if you don't record it, and so I happen to have a good memory, so. But it really is best to keep some kind of a dream journal. I recommend people just get a like a voice activated recorder and keep track of their dreams. I know, dreams, most dreams just seem like disjointed nonsense, but they're symbols. They're symbols.
Exactly.
And every one of those things in there, it's like, for instance, I used to play country music for a living back, you know, when I was 21. And a few months ago, I dreamt that that I was in a boat with the fellow that I used to play music with, who's now in the spirit world. And we were making a real quick journey, you know, down this river. And I woke up and I thought, well, now what does that mean? And I thought to myself, okay, I'm in this boat with Warren. I'm in the same boat with Warren. And I'm going, I'm in the same boat. And I thought to myself, okay, well, what was Warren, some of his issues? Well, he had problems with his teeth. You know, 10 days later, I come up with a toothache and had to have a tooth pull a couple weeks after that. So, and I know sometimes dreams, I don't know, back when I was a kid, in the comic books, they used to have something called Rebus. And they were word pictures. And you take, you know, two or three symbols and put them together and they meant a word. I noticed sometimes dreams are put together that way. Mm-hmm. Very rarely does anything come through that's like Moses on the mountain, you know, go do this.
Right.
It's up to you to figure out what Spirit's trying to tell you. And it's sure. A language.
And sometimes it's not trying to tell you anything, but sometimes it's trying to prepare you for something.
Yeah.
When I was living on Kauai, a year before we moved to Big Island, I was having dreams about lava flows in my backyard.
Huh.
I could never figure out why, because I had no intention to go and live on Big Island. And then it happened in a very short period of time where we came over, made the decision, moved our whole operation over here. And now I have Kilauea Volcano in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
It's through the forest. It's 2 miles in the direct line to my house.
You live in Volcano, Hawaii.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You feel like the energy there. Yeah, you felt attracted to that energy.
Yeah, that was a big reason for coming over.
Mm-hmm.
Been incredibly creative since we've been here.
Hmm. Interesting. You know, when volcanoes erupt, all kinds of things get thrown into the atmosphere.
Yeah, right. We get that sometimes. Most times the winds are good to us, so when they blow it over to Honolulu.
Mm-hmm. But Kilauea has been, now, is that the volcano that's more or less been active for, you know, quite a long time, or did it just wake up?
No, it's been active since 82.
Yep. Wow, I got to get over there someday. Closest I get to it's Hawaii 50. But I'd be, I think I'd be right at home there because I'm a big guy. I look like I've been getting lomi for forever, and I'd fit right into some of those shirts. I'm a pretty big guy. I weigh over 400 pounds, and I've got to get over there someday somehow before I pass into spirit again. Hey, who knows? Maybe when I come back, it'll be there. But yep. Well, you imparted a lot of wisdom. You know, some people, I guess, would want to think, you know, it's a lot more complicated than it really is.
I know. And my whole work is making it simple. And putting it in simple words and simple terms, because it essentially is simple. Sometimes I'll tell people they want to learn, you know, psychic skills, let's say. And I can teach all the psychic skills to somebody in an hour. It takes a lot longer to explain it and convince them that it can be done.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't take long to do it. Most of my, when I'm doing a workshop, most of my, even a lot of the deep exercises are about a minute. I will rarely take people through an experience over a minute because it isn't necessary to learn how to do it.
That kind of reminds me of my first wife. I didn't know she was going to pass away in 95. I was told in 82 that she might pass away during the dark of the moon. And we thought it was going to happen right away. And shortly after that, you know, she had a breast removed, and then she lost another one in 89. But in 94, I was told that another woman was coming into the family. I didn't know how that was going to work out. I was even told her middle name was going to be Joe. But the funny thing about this is my first wife became my second wife's best friend. And when it became apparent that when we knew she was going to pass away, Joanne kind of passed the baton. It was really more about my son Joe and helping, you know, finish raising him. But she was from Southern California, and her husband had been in the Navy, and she had no reason to believe that he was having fidelity to her. As a matter of fact, his commanding officer, every time he'd go on a cruise, would say, I can't believe what a good guy your husband is, and he doesn't even go on shore, and you got nothing to worry about. But one day, Betty was in she was into yoga, and they were doing some kind of looking at his spirit. They were just told to, you know, lay down, take a deep breath, imagine, you know, a television set in front of you, and you know, now reach up and turn the TV set on, and you know, pay attention to what you see. And she saw her husband on his Harley with a big buxom, a blonde, on the back of the Harley, driving up into the Sierras, because you know they lived, they were from Fresno. You know, she got up and ran out of that meeting, ran straight home and confronted him. And you know, it had only happened, you know, a day or two before. Mm. And you know, he admitted right on the spot, but it's, you know, those kind of things happen. And because it happened, it changed her life. And it was kind of a mess with her for a while. But the point is these things work.
Yeah.
And if you want answers, you really can get them. You know, you're not, it's not like we don't have any tools in this world.
Yep.
It's not like, you know, without some kind of defense. And like with me, the year before my first wife passed away, for about a year, I kept hearing this knocking. You know, I'd wake up from a sound sleep and I hear knock, knock, knock. And I wake up. This went on for months and months. I mean, for a while, and it kept going on for months afterwards. And finally, I figured, oh, what is this all about? For instance, one time I was I went into graduate school, you know, about a year after Joanna passed away, and that didn't work out. So Betty and I decided to go trucking. Well, I was in a truck, and it was in the wintertime. I was about 10 miles east of Evanston, Wyoming, one morning, and there was I heard this bam, bam, bam on the door just as the sun was coming up, and I leapt up out of the sleeper and got out and looked, and you know, there was no footprints leading to or from the rig. I'd parked, you know, kind of in a gravel area, so whoever it was wasn't human. Finally, I figured out, you know, I really wasn't paying attention, you know, and I remembered the passage from the Bible, you know, behold, I stand at the door and knock. And, you know, Jesus said, you know, my sheep hear my voice. Well, it's literal, but the Spirit's not going to come in unless you invite him. And you got
right. The open mind comes from.
You got to pay attention, and you know, it's not necessarily going to tell you, you know, what somebody else wrote down 2,000 years ago, because those things have been through a lot of hands, and everybody needs to have their own connection with their Creator, and that's what all the elders I know are teaching, and that's what you teach, and I applaud you for it.
Right.
Well, I guess it pretty much says it all. Do you have any other advice for folks that are...
Well, we have one little thing that is a simple thing to remember. It's easy to do. It's as profound as you want to make it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just three guidelines, and this is what we call practicing Huna, and the very essence of it. And it's three things. Bless the present, trust yourself, and expect the best.
Mm-hmm.
And blessing the present, we have a particular way of thinking about that. It means to appreciate it, acknowledge the goodness, compliment something, praise it.
Mm-hmm.
That's blessing. And so be aware of the goodness in your where you are. It doesn't matter if most of it's bad, be aware of the goodness, and that's what's going to pull you out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And to trust yourself, this has to do with self-confidence, and it also has to do with trusting your own worth. And people ask me, well, how do you gain confidence? And I tell them there's a slow way and a fast way. I said the slow way is to keep doing affirmations every day. I am confident, I am confident, I am confident. After some time, sometimes a long time, you'll eventually start to feel more confident. And the short way, the fast way, stop doubting. And that's all you have to do. And then the last one, expect the best. That's just very practical, because when you expect the best, your mind is pointed toward the best. And you'll get the best possible. If you expect the worst, that's going to take you downhill almost faster than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
Be sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments. Folks, the scriptures say, my people perish for lack of knowledge. We live in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous as time goes by. Millions of people are aware of this fact now and are actively preparing. Back in 2004, the folks here at Prophecy Keepers Foundation foresaw this situation and began preparing information for you. Friends, I seriously suggest that you head over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look at the Prophecy Keepers Trilogy and Preparedness Library. The Prophecy Keepers Trilogy is a 1,000-page intelligence briefing. The trilogy is a sum total of many years of collecting, collating, analyzing, and comparing prophecies from all over the planet. Before he passed away in 1985, Mad Bear Anderson predicted that someone would do exactly what we have done. Mad Bear passed into spirit in 1985 before he could realize his dream of collecting and comparing prophecies from all over the world. He said in his biography, someday someone will collect all the native people's prophecies, myths, and legends and would publish them in one place so they could be compared with those of all native peoples worldwide, and then we really will have something. And friends, you'll be absolutely shocked to find out that we discovered exactly what that something was that Mad Bear wanted everyone to know. As it turns out, that certain special something that Mad Bear was searching for in the prophecies has everything to do with your physical safety and how to protect it. Now folks, there's absolutely nothing available on the planet like this collection. You'll receive instant access to the Prophecy Keeper's Wisdom Treasury Vault. This is a huge 4.88 gigabyte library, 3,287 files in 222 folders. You'll also receive direct access to links that will allow you to download all 145 past Prophecy Keepers interviews. Now folks, I won't kid you, Prophecy Keepers does need money to continue to operate. We had a very close call at the end of last month. We almost didn't raise the funds that we needed to stay here on Blog Talk Radio. So please head on over to prophecykeepers.info and take a look.
Those three things, bless the present, trust yourself, expect the best, you're practicing Huna.
Truer words were never spoken. Well, I really appreciate you. And don't want to, you know, not cutting you off, but short and sweet. You know, some guys will come on here and talk for 3 hours.
Yeah, and,
but you said it. It's just from a different angle, and we want to encourage people. You know, there's a lot of different paths to walk, and but you know, you've got people doing Huna in Poland.
Oh yeah.
And in what other far-flung groups do you have?
Well, you know, all the places I've been to, and we have teachers and healers. We have our staff, and that's all our staff is volunteer, but these are staff members. They have a kind of a close connection with each other and with us. And we have them in Australia and South America. Lots and lots of them in Europe, all over the States, Japan. Trying to think of where else.
So they could reach you through your website, and then of course you've got lots of books and
www.huna.org. They can reach all parts of our what we have. We have over 300 articles on Huna for free. And we also have two booklets that we send out either as PDFs or in print. And we send those out free to individuals all around the world. And one is on the Aloha Spirit and how to practice that. And the other one is called Help Yourself with Dynamind, which is an absolutely awesome, simple and effective healing technique. And we share those for free to anyone.
And, of course, if people come to Hawaii, you've got some
things they can participate in. Workshops aren't free.
Sure. But if you come to Hawaii, you know.
Oh, yeah. Well, we also do have free meetings here, too. We have staff who teach weekly, and I teach monthly. I also teach, we have a center in a place called Second Life in a virtual world, where we have a tropical island, we have a conference center. We meet to do world healing every week. And that's all free. So we're reaching out in the inner world in a different way, in the computer world, as well as in this outer physical world and in the middle worlds, in the upper worlds too.
Sounds like fun.
It is fun.
Oh, what was it somebody said about you that you thought life was just for having fun and.
Well, no, not quite.
Fun and mirth. What was that quote? I can't remember.
The purpose of life, the whole purpose of it, is to learn how to party really well.
Yeah, yeah. There you go. Okay. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Yeah, I think people take life way too seriously. Yeah, it does help to be able to relax sometimes. And But hey, we encourage everybody out there to, you know, get a hold of you and your and what you've got to offer. And there's a lot there. And really appreciate you. Anytime you ever feel like, you know, excuse me, allergies are bad here. It was over 100 degrees today or the last couple of days. If you ever feel you want to, you know, make an announcement, even if it's just 5 or 10 minutes, or ever wanted to do another program or bring other elders on, just let me know, and we'll be more than happy to do it, even at short notice.
All right, good. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right. Aloha.
Aloha. Bye-bye now.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
of great wisdom, truth of other times, let the wind blow. Let the truth be known to all mankind again, prophecy keeper, prophecy keeper. Let the truth be known.